This is the Sexy Life podcast for women who want to experience the best sex, healthy and happy intimate relationships, and live a life that lights up your heart and soul. I'm Sarah Rose Bright, a sex and intimacy coach and the creator of Intimate Sexuality. It's my joy to help women and couples to love and celebrate their sexuality, create fulfilling relationships, and find their pleasure, playfulness, and passion for life. A sexy life isn't the perfect, polished life. This is living from our hearts and appreciating and celebrating the magic of life in all its messy glory, embracing the reality of our humanness, the highs and the lows, the beauty and the challenges. I invite you to join me and my expert guests for candid, juicy, and inspiring conversations around sex, relationships, and life today. Whether you're curious about what's possible or committed to living your most wonderful and fulfilling life, I'm so happy you are here. Welcome to this episode with Celeste Hirschman. Celeste is co-creator of the Somatica method of sex and relationship coaching, and I love the work of Celeste and her co-creator Danielle. And this episode is for you if you're curious about how to connect with how you want to feel during sex, what your erotic desires are, how to share that with a lover or partner, and also how to deal with that if you feel that they're not compatible. And we explored this and so much more, including how your erotic energy can be your guide, different relationship models, dating, rejection, a heap of juicy topics. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to this episode of the Sexy Life podcast. And I'm delighted today to be joined by Celeste Hirschman. And Celeste is the co-creator of the Somatica method for sex and relationship coaching and trains coaches. So welcome. Lovely to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. I've been following yours and your partner, business partner Danielle's work for, I was remembering actually over a decade now, because I actually came to Sex Board in San Francisco in 2013 to train with you, both of you, and I booked it and found out it was the year that you'd left.
Oh no.
I don't know if you know that story.
I didn't. I was like, wait, I don't think I trained you. Okay, good. I'm not losing my mind.
But that's how much I loved your work, and that's been for many, many years, and watched it evolve and grow. So I'd really love you to share about your work and what you do.
Yeah, Somatica was created out of a need that we felt was kind of missing in the field in terms of, you know, therapy, sexological body work. We felt like there was this piece that was missing around people being able to practice with intimacy in real time, both emotional and erotic, in order to build skills in that area. Because so many people coming into our office were really, we're wondering about partnership and how to have the best, you know, emotional and erotic connections as possible with partners, with dating, all of those things. And we thought, you know, this can be learned, but it's really not been broken down very well anywhere thoroughly where people can practice it in a safe container.
Yeah, absolutely. So what does practice it in a safe container look like?
So, you know, Somatica is a method where, you know, there are boundaries, like we keep our clothes on and we don't kiss our clients, but we do actually practice with sharing erotic energy and erotic touch in order for people to build skills around it, you know, both the skills of like sensual touching and the skills of like verbalization of, you know, sexy language, different kinds. How do you play with romance and passion? How do you throw somebody up against the wall in a passionate way that helps them feel like desired and, you know, gently caressed and seduced. So all of that is we can practice in the office, which is just super fun and extremely helpful to people feeling confident to be able to go out and do it out in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how would that look for an individual versus maybe a couple or people in partnerships that come to the office?
Yeah, for an individual, as the coach, we work with them directly in erotic connection. So I'm going to be practicing with you as though you're my partner. And within your comfort, we will practice different kinds of emotional and erotic connection. So it's, you know, completely based on your boundaries and comfort, of course, but we try different things. With a couple, I might demonstrate it on one of the partners and then they try it with each other. So they're doing a lot more of the interaction and practices with each other.
Amazing. And it's incredible what you pioneered with this, because it's, in a way, it's astounding. It's never happened before, this type of work. It's
Yes.
so obvious on one level, but it's also such big work. And so for somebody listening who's maybe thinking, wow, I could really benefit from that, but maybe a bit nervous or unsure about that, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think it is a, it is a leap. And at the same time, we go very slow. We go completely based on somebody's comfort. We're not going to push you to do anything that you don't want to do, because it's really about you finding your own sense of boundaries, what kind of consent you need, and what feels good for you in an erotic connection. We'll take it at your pace, is what I would say. And even if you just want to talk, you can get so much out of learning these tools. Yeah.
And I'm guessing you've developed this online the last few years, so people can
Yes.
access it online as well.
Whew, well, that was a whirlwind. We had to like switch everything around, because we'd always just done the whole training in person, but now we've adapted it completely online, and many of our coaches are coming from all over the world to train with us. And some of them are practicing online, and some of them are doing both online and in-person practices.
And how did you get into this work? I'd love to hear your pathway and
Yeah, I mean, I was always interested in sexuality from a very young age. I was a sexual person, which I think is often frowned upon for girls. I felt very unusual in the sense that I was more sort of, I probably behaved more the way that people socialized male behave. I was horny. I was somewhat aggressive when it came to sex. I wasn't so, maybe I was a little bit afraid of being used, quote unquote, just because that's something that women are so trained around. But mostly I just really was interested in sex, and I felt like it was a powerful place, a thing to talk about. Like, I could see the impact on people when I talked about it. And I also felt like it was something I was really comfortable with, so that I could help people with it. And it took me a long time to kind of finally find a master's program in human sexuality studies. I was the part of the first year at San Francisco State University, which was much more research-based. It wasn't like a experiential, practical, hands-on method. It was just talking about sex research mostly. But I kind of took that and rolled with it. And then I found the sexological bodywork training, and that kind of got me started. And then I was practicing as a sexological bodyworker, and I saw that so many people were coming into the office needing work around intimacy. And so I thought, oh, this can be so added to, the tools that you use in sex bod, having all of these tools of intimacy as well. So I felt like they worked really well together, actually. And Somatica was eventually created out of that with my business partner, Danielle Harrell.
Fabulous. And you mentioned there about how socialization, and I'd love you to sort of share what are some of the really key themes and messages that you see, particularly female bodies getting around sex in their growth formative years?
Yeah, it's endlessly frustrating. I recently had a lover sort of not have sex with me. We hadn't seen each other for a long time, and he took me out to dinner, but then he didn't have sex with me because he didn't want me to feel used. And I was so upset because I really wanted to have sex. And I'm like, I feel like you don't know me at all, even though we've been hanging out for quite some time, because I will never feel used having sex. I feel like I get a lot more out of it than you do, But the messages that we're brought up with around maintaining your virginity, and your virginity is what makes you precious, and if you lose it, you've given away your most important gift, and boys don't get these same messages for the most part, unless they're brought up in very religious environments. But mostly these messages are given to girls, and there's so much slut shaming and policing around girls' bodies and girls' dress, what we wear. And I think this slut shaming that we experience causes us to really shut down around our sexuality, because sex becomes something dangerous, not just dangerous in the sense that they scare us around pregnancy or they scare us around STDs, but dangerous because we might be pushed out of our social group, right? Like, people might think, oh, that's, diminish us and think, oh, that's just a slut, so she doesn't matter, or she doesn't deserve care or relationships, she's not relationship worthy. And all these messages, like, as much as we try to fight them, they get in there, and then we have to struggle with them as we go out and try to be sexual as adult women.
Yeah, it's so confronting and confusing, isn't it? Have you seen that the video that was around a couple of years ago, something like Be Like a Lady? It's brilliant. I'll send it to you because I played it to a group recently and it's called Be Like a Lady and it's Miranda from Sex and the City.
I
And
love her.
she's speaking about all these messages that we get as female bodies. And it's like, don't do this, do that, don't be too much, don't be, you know, all of this. And the group, I mean, people were in tears watching it afterwards because it's so powerful. And just to feel the volume of what we experience in a female body in our lives,
Yeah,
it's just
so sad and
incredible.
infuriating because we have so much erotic potential, you know, and it gets so repressed because of this disconnection that happens early on.
Absolutely. So, for somebody listening who is feeling repressed or has a sense there's blockages there, where can they start?
I think it's really helpful to just start with the concept of pleasure. It doesn't even have to be sexual pleasure, but what gives me pleasure in my body out in the world? Is it like walking in the sunshine or taking a bath or a shower, or is it being in nature? And as we start to tune into pleasure in our body and make that more of a focus of who we are, then we can start seeing how can I connect this to my erotic self? How can I bring this into a self-pleasuring practice, even if it's not masturbation, but just like, you know, touching your body when you're having one of those experiences, like lying in the sun by a lake and like just taking some time to feel your skin and notice that there's so much pleasure available there, or, you know, in the shower, just, you know, like feeling the water run down your whole body. And I feel like all of those things start to remind us that this, you know, we have this amazing body that has so much pleasure potential, and we can kind of refocus instead of thinking, oh, what's everybody thinking about me? But like, what am I feeling in myself? So I think that's a nice way to start.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to start. And when you talk about sort of erotic empowerment, what do you, for somebody who's erotically empowered, what do you see in them that's different from others?
Well, I definitely see a connection to like erotic energy as a life force. So, erotic energy isn't just something that they use in the bedroom, but it's something that they bring in every area of their life. So, you can see they're kind of lit up and they're flirtatious and playful and alive. And their eroticism is part of them wherever they go and also guides some of their choices, right? Or many of their choices. Like, when I think about like, what do I, you know, what do I want to do today? I listen to my pussy as oracle, you know, like if she tingles about something. I was in like a meeting the other day around this pilot program that we're doing on a television pilot that we're doing. And she was just like, zoom, zoom, zoom. You know, I was like, this is it, you know, like this is the kind of thing I want to do in my business. And I think that once we become erotically empowered, our eroticism points like guides us in terms of how to make our lives more wonderful in every way.
Oh yeah, I love that. Absolutely, 100%. And so, one of the things I know you talk a lot about that can really as well be another block for this is shame. And that's such a huge, all-pervasive thing. And so I'd love to hear what you see in the people that you work with around shame and also how that can be shifted as well.
Yeah, it's so constant shame in our society that it's almost like the part of the air we breathe. How often people are saying, well, nobody does that, or everybody's supposed to do that, or, you know, a good mom does this, and you know, a bad wife does this, right? It's like, or who does that, or how could you do that? And I see shame. I mean, I think of myself as a shame warrior, like somebody who's battling shame at every moment and always paying attention. Because shame is it's a freezer. It stops us from growth and it stops us from movement because it's fear. It's fear of being, again, of being ostracized or kicked out. That's basically what shame is. And so if we're ashamed, we even like hide things from ourselves. And the more we de-shamify, the more we can see, oh, that's a part of me. That's a part of my partner, you know, and you can deal with what's actually there and start to open up. And I think shame around sex is just, you know, also even like more constant than around other things. And that's just another reason that people aren't feeling good, you know, body shame, like people don't want to get naked in front of each other, or just shame about being turned on. I mean, I know, like I work with one woman whose her partner like was upset that she was making noise during sex. I guess he was worried about the neighbors or something. It was just like, she makes the most beautiful noises. I'm like, how could somebody tell you to shush? So, I'm helping her not shush.
But that's such a small but powerful example of where shame can creep into our encounters with other people. So yeah.
Yeah, and making sound can like really increase our arousal. It's like, sometimes it's the way that I get to orgasm is just I keep making noises and it connects down, right? Yeah. Connects down to your G-spot and it's like, the explosion happens, you know?
Yeah, sound. It's like just this channel that once it wakes up, there's no stopping me.
So, totally.
But I grew up in a, you know, silently masturbating just to not be heard, not get caught. And then that shame just builds in the system, doesn't it? And it's having these experiences that you can, like you say, bust through, de-shame. And one of the big areas that you do a lot around this is your work around desires. Mm. And such an area with such shame. And I really recommend to anyone listening your book, Coming Together, which I have right here, which is a wonderful book about desire. So tell me about some of the desires people experience and what you notice in terms of the shame around that, how people are afraid of voicing them and what people can do about it. And it's a big question.
Yeah, and I almost even want to start back from that a tiny bit, because I want to say that a lot of times people do not know what a good conversation is to have around sex. Like when they think, oh, I want my sex life to be better, but how do I even start talking about it? And I think core desires are so central to that conversation. It's where we need to start. And we need to start with no judgments and no pressure that we have to meet each other's desires, but an openness to like, oh, my this amazing partner of mine is sharing this beautiful, highly vulnerable part of themselves, their core desires. And how can I create a space to see that that's a deepening of intimacy, whether I'm capable of meeting those desires or not? So to create that space, right, first to have the conversation, and then to know what is a core desire. So a core desire is, what does someone want to feel during sex? Not even what they want to do yet, because that's a whole different set, right? We call that hot a sexual movie, but what do you want to feel during sex? And so for me, like personally, I want to feel very special and precious and almost like powerful because of how special I am. And then if I feel very much like that, I sometimes want to also feel used or made to do things, not that I don't want to do, but like told what to do, you know, because I also like to feel pleasing. And so that's my like own personal combination, and everybody has their own combination. Maybe it's like united or playful or degraded or, controlled or in control or, spiritual or at one with nature. Everybody has their own particular version of what they want to feel during sex. And that's like what makes it worth it, you know, because like you can all do things with your own parts. But it's like bringing somebody else there with you and feeling this connection, this deep longing for certain kinds of feelings that you want to feel. That's what creates peak erotic experiences.
And so for somebody listening, because I'm guessing for some people that's very clear what they want from sex, but others that might be, I don't know.
Yes.
Where might they start to examine how they want to feel?
Yeah, that's why in Coming Together, we have like pages and pages and pages of all of the different things that might give you hints into what you want to feel. It can be anything from like, you know, what are certain movies that are arousing to you, and think, oh, well, what is that making me feel? Or what are the characters feeling in there? Or, you know, just stories that you've read, books, or you think about your most exciting sexual experience, or you think about the kind of porn that you watch and you think, what's the emotion that this is eliciting? And that can really help you start to nail down what you want to feel during sex. And then you want to see the next conversation to have is, what do you want to do during sex that makes you feel that way? So what is the kind of touch? What are the words? What's the energy that's coming towards you that's going to give you those feelings that you want to have? And so that's where we start when we're working with clients, either individually or as couples, to help them get really in tune with what they want.
Yeah. And I love that you, that layer, because often people feel they have to start with desires, but that layer before of what do I want to feel, yeah, is such a rich layer to explore. And you mentioned words like degraded and controlled, and you know, there's all the be in nature and be at one with nature. But for some people listening, they either might be triggered by that, or they might be like, I want some of that, but what does that mean? What does that make me mean?
Yeah, completely. I think there are some desires that are very approved of in our society, yes, and some of them that are very shamed. But my feeling is when people have erotic experiences where they have agency, not where they're doing things that they don't want to do, but where they have agency, like some people even like consensual non-consent, where they've consented to do something that's not consensual, right? But I mean, like, if they have that agency and they have, you know, they're having the experiences they want to have, to me, that is extremely healing, whether it's a repetition like degradation or more of like a, you know, resolution like being adored or something like that. But the most important thing in this situation is that the person is choosing, and the choosing reclaims the power for them, even if early on the experience was one of loss of power. And that's something that I think the BDSM community really taught us, you know, and an important lesson. And I see a lot of people who've had disempowering experiences in their younger years, reclaiming their power by playing with those experiences like spanking or, you know, being told what to do or those kinds of things. And they have an erotic charge. And then it's like, oh, this used to hurt me. Now it's getting me off. And that's exciting and powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing on that. And you mentioned as well there about the hottest sexual movie. So that's a phrase that you've developed. So tell me about that and what that means.
Yeah, so hottest sexual movie is the things that you want to do, the words that you want to hear, the actions that you want to take or have taken with you, that make you feel your core desires, that make you feel the feelings that you want to have. So, you know, it can be anything. It doesn't even have to be sexual. And I think this is a place where people sometimes when they start talking about how to have better sex, they miss out on a lot of different possibilities, because some people are like, you know, it really turns me on when my partner comes home and says, hey, I really want to listen to your whole day and what happened for you, because then I feel so seen, and seen is part of their core desire. So it starts to get them turned on and then they feel much more ready for sex to be seen, maybe seen naked or seen in their arousal or something like that. But that the conversation that they have with their partner is the foreplay. And so if we start thinking about how we want to feel, we can really broaden our definition of sex and warm up and, you know, what turns us on. And it doesn't have to be like positions and, you know, hot tips and tricks, you know, it's much deeper than all of that and much broader as well.
Yeah. And with the hot sexual movies, because obviously a lot of people feel, what's going to happen? There's a big fear if mine's different than my partner's and how that might look. So I'd love you to speak to that.
Yeah, compatibility, right? And I think, you know, we have this fantasy, like the fantasy in our society, that kind of fairy tale is that people are just made for each other. And if they're meant for each other, it'll all just click. And it's like, no way. I would say that's a very low, low, low percent of people where you just have sex the first time and it's exactly compatible and the kind of sex you want to have, you know? And I do feel like the honeymoon phase, a lot of times the sex is hot for other reasons, like uncertainty and, you know, just newness and all those kinds of things. But after that, we kind of have to have these conversations so that we can have as much compatibility as possible. And sometimes people have very different movies. Like one person is completely about passion and the other person is all about romance, you know, or one person wants to do power play and the other person wants to do something that has more of a spiritual bent. Those things can be brought together and there can be like a melding of them, or there can be turn taking. And that's what we try to figure out is like how, and also, you know, there's lots of like for one type of desire, there's lots of different potential movies. So we help people think outside the box, like what would be an overlapping movie? Like this client, these clients where one of them wanted to feel really cared for and the other one wanted to feel in control and tie her up. And so then he went out and he bought like very like, we helped him figure this out. He went out and he bought like very like soft ropes and, you know, scarves and just like, it was a lot of like very caring touch as he was tying her up. And then they kind of both could get their movie at the same time. Whereas, you know, if, when she was thinking of being tied up, she thought, well, that's like harsh and I won't feel taken care of, you know? And he's like, oh, if I'm just caring for all the time, I don't get any of my stuff, you know, my needs met. And so this was a way to bring their movies together.
That's such a beautiful example because we don't have any reference points for this, do we, in the everyday world?
No, you know? There's not a lot. We're trying to make a television pilot now. We're working on it. It's going to be recorded next month to try to show these things.
Amazing.
And yeah, because we want like everyone to be able to have better sex in this way, you know, to learn what the each of them really wants and make those negotiations and creative, you know, creative solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's getting in touch with how you want to feel and not just how you can bring that into sex. But I loved how you shared that that can be permeate every place in the relationship. And really, really, you know, because like for me, I love to feel desired and that can just show up in, you know, cleaning the teeth in the bathroom in a conversation. It's as simple as that, but it can bring in that energy and that playfulness. When you've got that little nugget, because it is really a nugget of gold, isn't it? When you find that what you want to feel, and then you've got the core desires, you've got the movies. So how about if, you know, are there places when, you know, sometimes people can't meet the other person's movie for whatever reason? And how does that work out? How does that play out?
There are places where people can't meet the other person's movie once they've tried everything, or maybe there's something where the other person, whatever it is, it's like, it's something that's just really a turnoff for their partner. So there's lots of different ways to navigate that. I think one of the things that I really try to emphasize to people is that there's two different pieces of relationship. There's attachment and there's pleasure and eroticism. And we sort of expect all of those things to always come together. This is part of the fairy tale. So you might have a very long, loving attachment with someone, but lose your erotic energy or not have good compatible movies or have them something that you just don't want to meet at all. And I try to help people maintain that attachment because attachment is so core to our sense of well-being. And we always think, oh, well, if we can't have everything in a relationship, we should just break up and disconnect from each other. And sometimes people do need to do that. But I see that as a last resort. You know, are there other options? Does the person just want to feel their disappointment and accept they're not going to get that piece? Is there a way to honestly outsource, you know, to negotiate somebody getting their needs met somewhere else in a way that still makes the, you know, still feel safe enough in the relationship? So we just look at all of the different options and see what's possible to maintain that beautiful long-term connection and also get as many needs met as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think that, like you say, that fairy tale that this is how it's going to be. And if we don't tick all these boxes, then there's something up with us is so strong. And to realize we can't meet everybody's need, our partner's needs all the time. And
it basically makes needs. Makes everyone feel like a failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so sad, you know, because really human relationships are challenging, right? They're not just like, oh, I found the person and now it's all going to be easy from here on out, happily ever after. It's like, no, you live a whole life, you know, and you see the ups and downs and the needs that are met and those that aren't, and how do we keep being loving through those challenges? That's what intimacy is all about.
Mm. And you mentioned, you know, what are some of the other things that you feel get in the way of people with relationships in terms of the fairy tale that people believe?
Well, we said, you know, this perfect compatibility, the ability that you're going to meet the other person's needs. You know, I say like relationships are at least 20% disappointment, right? We talk about that in Making Love Real. Because if you assume that that's how it's supposed to be. You'll just keep throwing people away and trying to find this perfect person instead of actually saying, okay, like, we're two people. We're not meant for each other. We're meant to be ourselves and be in connection with each other. And I think that's the big difference, right? Because that means we aren't perfect for each other. We're just human beings trying to do the best we can and, you know, feeling those differences. So I think that the fairy tale really gets in the way. And also it's like the fairy tale is that something has to last forever to be a success. And I've had so many beautiful relationships, successful relationships that aren't in the same configuration anymore. My wonderful ex-husband lives downstairs with his girlfriend. And we're best friends, you know? And it's like, if I thought, oh, it has to be this way forever or nothing, then I would have lost that beautiful connection that we have. So I just try to help people not feel like it's all or nothing, but deal with the reality and complexity of relationships.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you talk about the term you mentioned beforehand around emotional empowerment. And I'd love you to speak to that.
Yeah, I'm really excited about emotional empowerment. I feel like it's the thing that's changed my life the most about just about anything in doing this work. I was pretty comfortable as a sexual being, but I had a lot of attachment trauma as a young person. And it took me many years to learn how to deal with my emotions in a way that was constructive and that would help me get my needs met as much as possible. So I used to just get triggered and then I would freak out and I would break up with people when I didn't even want to. I would like create all of this drama, you know, and I didn't know how to be with my feelings and share my feelings in a way that was, you know, soothing and effective. And I think that's what emotional empowerment is, because we all have, you know, different kinds of traumas or fears or things that come up. And when something that somebody does elicits that in us, we often will blame them or shame them or run away from them or shut down, as opposed to actually being like, okay, what's happening here? What am I feeling? And what do I need to do to take care of myself and to get the care that I need out in the world, as opposed to like, how could you do this to me? Or, you know, all of the kind of stuff that happens around feelings that is not vulnerable and not very effective, actually. You know? So I feel like the more that we understand our emotions and our triggers, the more that we're able to explain them to other people and what we need in those moments, the better chance we have of getting our needs met and, you know, having much more time of joy and pleasure and sex and much less time of pain and trauma. And for me, that's what Somatica is all about, like increased joy, attachment, you know, orgasms, pleasure, fun, play, and as little pain and trauma as possible. To me, that's how you maximize a life. And an emotional empowerment is a big part of that.
Yeah, and especially with what we've been going through the last couple of years in the world as well, and the intensity. So again, sort of for somebody listening, where might they start with that? Or they may be trying different things. And, you know, I certainly was flailing around for years trying different things before I built resiliency in my system and capacity in my system to deal with it. So what would you share some wisdom around that? What on from your journey or working with clients?
Yeah, I think it's really helpful to start to pay attention to what upsets you. And in those moments, to bring a lot of curiosity and non-judgment and see like what's being touched inside of you. What fear, you know, like, is it a fear that I'm going to be left? Is it a fear that I'm not enough, that I'm too much, that I'm not important? You know, what's happening inside of you? And to start to be with that, those fears in a more loving, gentle way, to understand that we have a little hurt child inside of us. And sometimes it needs attention and soothing, because sometimes we get scared again in the same bad old way that we did before. And so I think if we start there with some gentleness and curiosity and try to understand what our biggest fears are or our biggest triggers, that's a piece of it. And then there's all sorts of different kinds of, you know, soothing, self-soothing, ways to take care and modulate those feelings. And then there's ways to share them vulnerably that make them most likely to be heard But it's hard to share vulnerably when all of our protective mechanisms are, you know, like taking over. So to see like, what are your protective mechanisms? Do you usually dissociate or shut down or fight, or, you know, what gets in the way of connection and vulnerability in those moments?
Mm. And how might you share some of that with somebody vulnerably?
Well, I think like, you know, I remember this one, this guy I was dating, and he was, I was leaving his house maybe the second time that we were together hanging out at his house. And he very quickly sort of, like he just switched gears really fast and went on to something else. And that just touched a little bit my abandonment trigger. And obviously he wasn't abandoning me, he like had a work project that he wanted to move on to, and he thought he'd said goodbye, I'm sure, but like, it just felt very abrupt to me. And so when I was driving home, I gave him a call and I said, hey, you know, I just want you to know that the way that you, that we ended our connection there, it just made me feel a little bit like, it felt a little fast for me, and it just made me feel a little bit, dismissed. Hmm. And then he's, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, wait. Because I want to help them empathize also. I said, no, I know you will probably do something like that again. And it's okay, you didn't do anything wrong. But if you could just understand that that's something that's a little bit hard for me, and give me some empathy and maybe try to think of it in the future, that would be great. Mm-hmm. You know, so to help people understand you without going, because we go so quickly into apology and fixing, and we don't go into like empathy and care. So we often have to teach people how to do that. But it really helps when you say something vulnerably, when you say like, I felt a little dismissed, as opposed to like, wow, what an asshole. How could you just like move on to something else? You know, when you were supposed to be saying goodbye to me or something like that. You know, that's how people often express themselves, as though the other person has done something wrong. And then they're much less likely to get care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's such a big shift, isn't it? Just from that blaming place, shaming place, to the, this is what I feel and what I need. And yeah, just the magic of what, you know, I'm in a relationship for the first time where we've been able to share these sort of things openly. And all it's taken sometimes is just the sharing of it that just changes the whole dynamic. And right? When those things come up, they don't have the charge, because we're able to talk about it and be open about it. And it's so beautiful to witness.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes there's nothing that even needs to change. It's just that open conversation and empathy needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was curious, actually, dating was just popping in, because dating's always a sort of, it's been so tricky for so many people as well the last couple of years. And so I'd love to share what you've seen in your practice and with your students around this, and also how people have got creative with it as well in these times, and what shifted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a dater. I date a lot. It was hard during the pandemic. There was like a 2-month period where I didn't get any sex and I almost murdered someone. but I think people, you know, people have gone to Zoom dating and, you know, doing all sorts of different ways to meet each other during the pandemic that were safer. But I think dating in general, yes, it's changed a lot because there's so much, you know, swiping and online. And at the same time, there's ways that it's very much stayed the same, which is that it's hard, you know, you have to go out and put yourself in some way or another in front of another person and deal with all of your insecurities and uncertainties. And also, like, you have no idea who's going to be sitting across from you and how it's going to feel. And it's a lot, you know. I mean, even for an extrovert like me, it takes a lot of energy. So I can only imagine for an introvert, you know, it's like much more intense to put yourself out in that way. And I guess in Somatica, we just keep trying to help people be gentle on themselves and not feel like, oh, I have to hook on to one person right away, but it's okay to just meet different people and see how it feels and not feel like it's like, oh, this has to turn into a relationship or something like that. You know, to slow that process down and take some time to get to know people.
Yeah, I call it slow dating because it's the sort of the antidote, because that's what people share is the speed of dating these days, isn't it? With the swipe, 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 and the pressure to make instant decisions and all of this. And it's like, let that go. If it's meant to go anywhere, that person will hang around.
Exactly.
And slow it all down so you can feel into, do I want to meet them again? Do I want to spend more time with them rather than, is this the person I want to be with, or the fantasy that can happen for many people?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and one of the things I'd love to hear you sort of speak about is, you know, people often say to me as well, one of the things that stops them going dating is just the fear of rejection and the pace of rejection. What would you say to somebody listening from that perspective?
Yeah, I do feel like we don't care for ourselves very well when we're rejected. Like we feel like, oh, we're not. I think people have this idea that they're supposed to not feel rejected. Like, oh, if I could just not care what anybody else thinks, that's like as though that's the goal, you know? And it's like, we're human beings. We're social animals. We care deeply what other people think. If we didn't, we wouldn't survive. So it's built into our nervous system to care what other people think. Most people do, and it doesn't usually go away. What we can do when we feel rejected is actually be gentle with ourselves. Like, wow, I was really interested and into that person, and it hurts that they didn't feel that way. And actually take some time with, you know, I think of it as my inner child who feels scared of not being loved or something like that. Take some time with that part and just say, I know, like, it's hard, you know, you're not everybody's flavor, not everybody's your flavor. And to just be loving with the part that feels rejected, as opposed to like harsh and dismissive. I think it's a little bit easier to go out and put yourself out there if you know that you can take care of yourself when it doesn't work out, and have other, you know, have friends to hold you in that as well, and to talk to, like, man, it sucked, you know, I really wanted that and I didn't get it. And for them to be able to love you and tell you how wonderful you are when you experience those rejections. And I think that's particularly, it's actually much harder for people socialize as men. They beat themselves up for feeling anything. And so it's a harder thing to get over. And they often don't have a community of supportive folks who they can talk to when they feel hurt or sad or rejected. So it's there's this isolation. And that's the socialization around, like, you know, having to do everything by yourself and not supposed to feel. So I don't know, I encourage men to honor the fact that they can also have emotional response to dating as well.
Yeah, I love that reframing. And we're at a time as well in history where the choices of what's available in terms of relationship options and configurations and is more broader than ever. So, you know, I speak to people, I don't know what type of relationship I want. And so curious what you'd say in terms of designing the relationship you want, how to find that for yourself.
Yeah, one real big motto of Somatica is one size does not fit all, right? And we have so many images out in society about like one size is supposed to fit everyone, especially, you know, monogamous marriage that lasts forever, that's cohabitation, you know, like all of that is like this idea that everybody's supposed to fit into that. So I really try to help people see, you know, what is the relationship structure that makes them feel most secure and themselves, right? And so, and that's the balance that we're all trying to figure out here. Like, how do I feel connected and to someone else and secure in that connection and be true to myself at the same time? And it's a delicate balance. So helping people find the relationship structure that maybe is, you know, most aligned with themselves and least triggering for them is what I try to help people do. And it's hard because sometimes two people get together and those things are kind of opposite for them. And that's a tough one to work through. But if you find someone aligned with you, you know, who wants to do the mono thing or do the poly thing or do the open or swinging or monogamish, you know, there's so many different choices. I was just on a panel recently with somebody who's trying to help poly people be able to marry more than one partner. So there are a lot of choices. And I think when we listen to the inside voice of what we really want, as opposed to the outside voice of what society tells us we're supposed to want, life gets so much happier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that, you know, going out, because I also see from some of the women that I work with that they'll go out not sure what they want and they'll see what presents. Yes. And that's also what can create, then they fall in, get attached to somebody who wants something totally different. And what you're saying is really get clear as you ever can be on what feels aligned for you and go out from that place is a very different dating experience.
Yeah, and it's definitely a process of trial and error, right? Where you have to sort of figure out, you know, okay, I tried this. I tried a lot of different things. And for the most part now for me, like being in a dating situation with multiple people has been great. I was in one relationship during the pandemic. And it was because I felt like he really met all of the very high bars that I now have that used to be very low. Because I was really, like you said, sort of trying to prove myself to the other person and not thinking, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And now it's like to be in a relationship with someone it's a big deal. And so I don't really want a relationship unless it's somebody who really meets me in a lot of different ways, emotionally, erotically. I have a very high sex drive. I spent a long time in a relationship where my partner had a much lower sex drive than me. And that was just a nightmare. Like I was unhappy all the time. You know, so like I'm not putting myself into relationships unless they fulfill certain needs. And otherwise, I don't have to be in a relationship and I can just have amazing sex with beautiful people.
I love what you said before that, you know, our definition of successful, and actually you can have lots of successful relationships. It doesn't have to be one. Is it fulfilling and does it meet all those needs? So beautiful.
Exactly. And does it, you know, like what does it or doesn't it trigger? Because it's like, as soon as I'm in a relationship, I'm scared to lose it. That's my abandonment trauma, you know? And so if I'm not in a relationship and just dating, that doesn't seem to get triggered. And it's like, sweet. I much prefer not being triggered all the time.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So I love what you share. I just want to reiterate that because I just think that's so important, is one size doesn't fit all. Yeah. And to really find what works for you. And like you say, it's an experiment as well. It's a process and hopefully a fantastic exploration of fun and discovery. So thank you. So I'd love to for you to because coming to the close, and with Somatica, there may be people who are listening who are curious about what would it be like to become a sex and relationship coach. They may be actively considering it, or they may be even training at the moment and not heard of your training. So I'd love you to share a little about that.
Yeah, and some people take Somatica also just for personal growth. Like it's a very transformative, in-depth experience. You know, they take the beginning training and they learn everything about themselves when it comes to emotional empowerment and erotic empowerment and exploring boundaries and core desires and all those things, all the stuff that we talked about today and more. And then some people go on to do the certification, the second half of the training, and become sex and relationship coaches. And, you know, we train coaches in a really effective way, in the sense that I think a lot of trainings can be kind of passive video watching, or there's not a lot of practice and experiential exercises. And this is, you know, tons of experiential work. You're in class with all of your fellow students, you're practicing every tool that we teach. So it really prepares people to be To go out there and be amazing coaches who can retain clients. And we also help people with marketing their business and getting clients, which is a big piece that's sometimes left out of programs. So I think it really prepares coaches to help people with all of stuff around sex and relationships that they might see their clients facing out in the world.
Wonderful. Well, I'll share the link to the training on the show notes. And also your two wonderful, well, you've got three books, haven't you, actually?
Oh.
Yeah. Tell us a little about those.
So we have Coming Together, which you talked about, which is about core desires and compatibility. We have Making Love Real, which is kind of for couples, understanding emotional and erotic connection and how to have them, you know, most pleasurably and effectively. And then we have Cockfidence, which is for men interested in being lovers to women. And it's about becoming an extraordinary lover and being true to yourself in relationship. So we have all of those. The other thing I wanted to say about the training is that it's just an amazing international community of people. And I think finding the deep friendships and relationships that come out of Somatica is kind of sometimes hard to find as an adult in the world. And we're just so pleased to see that that's, you know, also collaborations around work and business as well. So it's a really wonderful aspect of the training.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I'll put the links to your books because I really recommend your books. And because there's so much more than books. They're like practical guidebooks and just fantastic exercises. And the Making Love Real, I mean, just it's such a brilliant guide for couples that's so real as well. It's like, you know, really practical and lots of myth busting. And yeah, it's a brilliant book. Highly recommend it. So as this is the Sexy Life podcast, I'd love to finish with asking you what makes for living a sexy life. Yeah, I mean, you shared a lot already, but I'd love to wrap up with a summary of that for you.
I mean, for me, it's just having a lot of sex, but, you know, I guess sort of basic in that way. I feel like it's actually just feeling your erotic self everywhere you go, you know, like we talked about before, and knowing that our eroticism is part of our aliveness. And if we keep it open, then every experience can be erotic.
Beautiful. That's a delicious way to end. And apart from your website, anywhere else people can find you online, social media or...
I think somaticainstitute.com is probably the best place. We also have celesteanddanielle.com, and then we are on Facebook, and we're less active on Instagram, but I think we're just Celeste and Danielle on Instagram as well.
Yeah, and you've got some really great blogs and things, a huge library of blogs, haven't you, on the Celeste and Danielle website on all sorts of different sexual things. Yep.
Yeah, and also sexcoaching.com.
Okay.
Lots of articles there too about how to improve your sex life. And if you're interested in becoming a sex and relationship coach, we have a lot of articles there as well.
And you've got some great videos on YouTube too.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'll
put if you want to see a full session, you can Google Somatica Sessions, which is a different, it's the woman who's making the TV pilot. It's her YouTube page, but it's called Somatica Sessions. And it's got like 40 minute sessions, 30 minute sessions on it. So it's really fun to be able to see the more interactive part of the work.
Oh, beautiful. I'll add that to the list as well. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great to see you, Sarah.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Sexy Life podcast with me, Sarah Rose Bright. You can find all the details for me and my guest in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode and to make it easier for other people to find out about the Sexy Life podcast, I'd so appreciate it if you could take a moment to subscribe to or follow the podcast, review and rate it on Apple or Podchaser, and do share with your friends, loved ones, or anyone you think would benefit. Wherever and whenever you are listening, I wish you a beautiful day.